One in four people in the UK will experience a mental health problem each year. Everyday problems with work, with money, with health, with family and friends can make it harder for people to cope. There are different types of mental health: depression, anxiety, phobias, obsessive compulsive disorders, panic disorders, PTSD, eating disorders. The list goes on. Mental health can affect any person, any age. One age group that tends to go unnoticed is students. According to one report, 78% of students experienced a mental health problem in 2016, and 33% had suicidal thoughts. In the UK, our NHS is already under a lot of strain, with limited support for mental health as it stands. In this episode, I spoke to George Watkins, who has battled with mental health for the last 7 years. He's a student at Cardiff University and was recently elected as the university's new mental health officer for the Students' Union. Welcome to Think Tank. This is George's story.
My name's George Watkins. I'm a second year English Lit and Philosophy student at Cardiff University, and I'm most recently our new mental health officer. Since I was about 13, I've had problems with anxiety and depression of various forms, various degrees of intensity, depending on the year, the situation, certain events in my life. And as of today, 3rd of March 2017, when we're recording this, I'm currently in the best place I've been in pretty much since I was about 13, which is quite scary but overwhelming, but a good thing at the same time. And it's very much after something like this, you spend a long time trying to find your feet and find out who you are again, after so long feeling like you're out in the cold, if that makes sense. I wanted to start by explaining an event that happened, it will have been about February time of 2016, so about a year and a bit ago. Essentially, I went to uni in the morning about, for 9 a.m. or something, and I felt pretty strange. It had been a rough few days, and I'd not been in a good place. And then I finished all my lectures, and just as I was walking home, I just burst into tears, and it had been building for quite a while, but I felt suicidal. It was quite a grey, sort of cold, wet day, which felt like it reflected the mood inside my head, because I wasn't thinking straight. I didn't really know what to think or what to do or anything, and and it reached a stage where I was genuinely planning it, not thinking about my friends, my family, the potential impact that something like that would have, and somehow I was dragged out of it, mostly because one of my friends, who also has similar problems to mine, grabbed me and was like, right, okay, let's go and have a cup of tea at mine and sort this out. And it wasn't suicide in the sense of punishing myself or in the way that some self-harm sufferers experience, but in the sense of hopelessness and feeling like it's the end of a road, and there's no way out besides doing something ridiculously stupid like that. And I mean, looking back now, even to that period and to the period around that before that, it feels honestly like it's someone else. But I wanted to start with an event like that because many mental health problems like mine have what are sometimes referred to as a crisis point, where if you imagine you're going along a road and then all of a sudden you hit a massive hill, that's sort of what it's like, and it can be triggered by anything, along the lines of life events, major stresses. But for me, it wasn't even that. It was, I'd reached a point where I was like, I need to sort this out. I need to change something in my life, or genuinely, I'm at risk of doing something stupid that would have massively impacted my friends and family. And probably an awful thing to say is that I don't regret having those feelings. Because it made me kick on and get me into the place I am today. Essentially, yeah. Yeah, it's it was a chance to change perspective, definitely. And I know it's very hard hitting and it's very, very distressing to think about. But the thing is, the reason that is important, I'm very involved in student mental health campaigning, but in 2014, we had, I think, across UK universities, 130 student suicides. They're the most recent statistics we've got. And there's every possibility that could have gone up over the past few years, where we've had various reports of government cuts to youth mental health, lack of provisions, increase in demand due to all sorts of different things. I'm not going to get into that. But essentially, the main message here is that my case is not extraordinary. I'm one of the lucky people who's been able to see the light at the end of the tunnel and experience life sort of on the side that I never thought I'd see. A window to the outside and a window into the other side of the studio. If you imagine yourself sitting on one side of the window and you can see yourself sitting on the other side, but you've got no way of reaching them, that's what it felt like. And I've been able to really stretch this analogy, go out and be in the place that I want to be. But yes, so where did this all start then? I guess the first place to start is when I was about 13, when I started to have panic attacks at school. So, for example, one day I woke up, I was at, I was at a boys' school at the time, in year nine, which in that system, that was my first year. More or less, I found it really hard. I think a big trigger for me was my parents were divorced and around Christmas time of, 2009, when I was in year nine. And coming from that, I think I found it hard to adjust. I mean, because I was away at home, I was boarding. But at the same time, I felt this support structure I had behind me disintegrating a bit. And I mean, it's hit my sister, who's 3 years younger than me, fairly hard as well. But in different ways. And I think I remember one day I went into school, did all my lessons and stuff. It was it was a Saturday morning and we had Saturday school. And I remember because I was a bit of a rebel. I was in a rock band and we were practicing about in the early afternoon. And I was in the practice and I just started to feel really hot. And I didn't really know why, and started to feel very itchy and restless, and I didn't know what it was, and my heart started to race, and I was a little bit like, okay, maybe I'm going to faint, maybe something like that. So I went straight home after that, because we didn't live too far away. We only lived about 15 minutes away, but it was... So I went home. I was sort of sat around, still feeling hot and itchy, and really confused, and I didn't really want to explain to anyone what was going on. Worked through it, got back home that night, and I thought it was all right, still feeling anxious and stuff. The next thing, I was sat in my dorm having a chat with my friends. I woke up at about 1 o'clock, half one in the morning, on the floor with all of my with all of the guys in my boarding house looking around me, my housemaster, my my matron, and who apparently in the panic of wondering what the hell had gone on, I actually punched in the face. Bearing in mind, she was about 70. Oh, and a side note, a massive fan of Metallica. Go figure. I know. Punched her in the face by accident. So essentially what I'd had throughout that day was a day of extended panic. And that had followed on into when I was asleep, and so I'd had a sleep panic attack, which is quite scary. And over the next couple of years, that happened every so often. But yeah, I'm going to jump forward a couple of years. I was in year 11 now, so GCSE year. That was in many ways the best but the worst year of my school life, because for half of the year I was doing somehow doing very well with sort of like predicted A's, A stars, I was one of them. But alongside that I was doing an orchestra, a guitar group, double bass lessons, three rock bands, a play, and other music groups and stuff. And I was honestly literally so busy that I'd leave at like 8 o'clock on a Monday morning, stay in school until about 7 o'clock at night, go home, wouldn't even have time to make a cup of tea. So right, so what I used to do was cut open a tea bag, pour the actual tea, like granules almost, yeah, into a cup of cold water, for some reason, drink that, and then go out to practice for the rest of the evening. It was then choir, and then going off to 2 hours of play rehearsal. As you can imagine, I cracked, and it was after Christmas now, so about January, February time again. And it was very strange. We were in the middle of our mock exams, and I just buckled. Didn't know what to do, and it really freaked me out. And because I'd be asleep at home, and I just would have no energy to do anything. And this is where the depression side creeps into the story. So the thing is, with anxiety and depression, they sound like they shouldn't go together, in the sense that anxiety often feels like it fills you with energy, and you feel like you've got this thing bubbling inside you, sort of rapid heart rate and like can be manic sometimes. And then on the other hand, you've got depression, which pulls you down. They work together horribly, in the sense that they both rob you of your energy, and at the same time make it very hard to recover. And as a result, a lot of people won't actually open up to anyone because they don't know what's going on, because it's quite scary. So for me, my response, yeah, going back to the crisis point, this was my first crisis point. I was on stage, doing the performance of the play, which we'd done in conjunction with the girls' school next door. I was on stage doing a monologue. We were about three nights into, I think, about a five-night run or something, and I just couldn't cope. I choked on stage, not as in sort of, I can't do this sort of choking, not literally choking. Ran off the stage, bailed for that performance and the following performances. Ran outside, burst into tears, didn't know what to do. My parents came outside, took me home, didn't know what was going on. I was honestly, I didn't know what was going on, but as soon as I got home, I felt fine. And I used to, then I got used to feeling fine when I was at home, which turned into a habit, which turned into me missing months of school.
So you associate being at home with that feeling
of safety,
yes.
And security.
And I guess, well, would you say the opposite for school then? You associate school with?
School was stress, anxiety, potentially actually things being real. When I was at home, it was my safe place. It was my place of security where I could control my environment. And I mean, yeah, you'll be surprised by this. From November till May, I didn't leave the house.
Really?
Yes, 6 months. I did leave the house twice. The first time was to push myself, in inverted commas, to walk across, where we live. We still live there now. It's like a townhouse, if you imagine. We've got Sainsbury's next to us, and then so I was like, right, okay, I'll try and walk to Sainsbury's. I managed to make it to the traffic light at the other side of the street, turned around, felt really proud of myself. My relationship with my parent, with my, because I live with my mum, was massively fractured as a result, because she didn't know what was going on. She didn't know how to help. And it was horrible. Every day was the same. And it's amazing how easily you can build habits to distract yourself. And about the same time I was put on medication. I'd been on short action beta blockers, which essentially slow your heart rate down, to try and deal with some of the symptoms of anxiety. I'd been on them for about 6 months, I think, before then. But around that time as well, I was put on a slower release one, so it would control, so like lower my heart rate throughout the day. And then Prozac, I think it was 20 milligrams, so not the smallest dose, but a fairly moderate dose, which was to try and tackle the depression. Little did I realise, it made me feel numb and cut off from everything. Literally everything, like having conversations with people, I would feel like it wasn't really happening, which is why I made it so much easier to stay in the house. Eventually I was dragged off and able to go into school, do my GCSEs and then come home. And then the event that sticks with me most at the end of that year is we had a tradition at our school of jumping in our school swimming pool. When we all finished our exams, and I jumped into an empty swimming pool by myself in my school clothes. Yeah, it was a way of celebrating, but there was no one else there because that's what my life had turned into. There was no one there with me anymore. And it's hard, it's painful, and I think I don't still appreciate that now. God, there is a positive note to that, which I'm going to actually throw in now. I was going to say it later. When I went back home at Christmas, as in Christmas 2016, that's the first time I'd been home in a year. We'll get to that, like literally a year. When I went home, it was first time I'd been home. And what I decided to do was write a letter to all of my friends, both from sixth form and from school, from years 9 to 11, explaining everything that went on, because I did essentially vanish without a trace. I got a massive response. I don't think there was a single negative one. Because my first response was to say sorry, and everyone was like, why on earth are you saying sorry? That's ridiculous. You don't need to do that. And I was humbled, really, really humbled. And I've formed some new relationships again with those people that I thought I'd lost. Yeah, it meant a lot to me because it's, I'll get onto this later, but where I am now is sort of trying to piece together some fragments almost. God, and then we moved forward. I went into sixth form. I changed schools to our local college, which was, up the road, top of town. By which time, we'd moved into the town where all of this took place. And that sort of was very samey in the sense that I'd wake up in the morning, go to college, do my lessons, do the bare minimum, come home at 3:30, and then I'd be back in my safe space with my own little world. So even though I physically wasn't in there anymore, I still had that as something that was mine to control. Going on the safe spaces thing, what I'm referring to, which is what I didn't realise until much later, is agoraphobia. Even now, I still struggle with, I've got my safe space, I've got my home. But for example, if I was to walk to the other end of town by myself with, for example, no bike, which for me gives me an easy escape route if I need it, that would be immensely hard. That's and that still lingers today, even though the issues are mostly gone. But yes, so sixth form was very much a case of that, of going and then being anxious all day, going home, being very tired in the evening, not really keeping in touch with many friends, and sort of having a hard time with trying to explain why I was always like, why I'd never go out and do anything with them. Go on holiday. I mean, I haven't been on holiday, right, since 2012. At the end of sixth form, I was like, okay, let's try and apply to uni, because I began to get an inkling that moving away from home might do me a hell of a lot of good, even though it would be the hardest thing in the world. So I was like, right, okay, sod it. Let's apply to Oxford, UCL, Durham, Liverpool and York, I think it was. Liverpool and York being my backups in inverted commas. Somehow I had an interview at Oxford, and I think a large part of that was, well, the reason for that was while I was in my terrible place and that 6 months at home, I'd actually managed to write a book, because with a lot of time on your hands, you can actually get a lot done. And I think that was, yeah, impressive. I mean, I went to the I did go to the interview, so I've been to Oxford once as well. There you go. Did that. I was very close to getting a place, but I didn't. Turned down UCL, Durham, Liverpool, York as well, which sounds very much like I'm blowing my own trumpet, but I wouldn't have been able to go. Took a gap year then. I worked three jobs. It's very much... Those sort of 3 years are very much transitional. It's like you've got your crisis point. You've got 3 years of transition, of pause almost, of where everything's a bit monotonous. And then there's university. And essentially me and my dad were like, right, okay, let's apply to Cardiff. Let's get me to apply to Cardiff because it's 2 hours away. My dad lives near Bristol, so essentially it's about an hour away from me here, and it's an hour away from my home, so it's perfect as a stopping off point. And so, right, okay, let's go for Cardiff. So we came and had a look around and stuff, which was so hard, considering I still felt ridiculously out of it as a side effect of the medication, and actually still not really having dealt with any of these problems that were underlying the anxiety and the depression. But I managed to do it. I remember walking through the city centre with my dad, holding on to him, because I was convinced I was going to faint, having to literally hold on to street corners, because I just was struggling so much, which is very strange. And I remember us driving actually past the union. I can look and see where we drove past now. Yeah, and I got a place, and I got in, and then before I knew it was the end of September. It was I was going to turn 20 on my second night here, because I'm a September birthday. And yeah, we drove up here, and I was, I moved into halls, and I hadn't really appreciated on the day what was happening. We'd had to stop about an hour into the journey because I had a migraine, because I used to get migraines. Funnily enough, haven't had a migraine since I came off the medication. Interesting for the scientists amongst you, the pharmacists. So that first night, my dad helped me load everything into my room. And then before I knew it, he left, said goodbye. He was staying in a hotel nearby just in case I had a real problem. And I was completely alone, and I was like, shit. And I remember that night, I didn't really sleep much, managed to make it through to the next day. Honestly, I was panicking every 5 minutes, treating every hour as a new challenge, and then tried to get to sleep again that night, and I noticed a sign when I was panicking about 3 o'clock in the morning. Which was the morning of September the 18th, which was my birthday. So 3 o'clock in the morning on my birthday. I was sobbing my heart out to Nightline, who are essentially our equivalent student version of Samaritans, who are fantastic. Sobbing my heart out. And just stood outside my halls, just didn't know what to do, what I'd done. And then, before I knew it, it was my birthday and I was 20. And it's sort of 7 years later, 7 years of awfulness. And then all of a sudden, without realising it, I've lost the rest of my teenage years. I'm 20. I'm in double figures and I'm at university and I don't know how I got here. And I didn't think I'd be able to cope. And I thought, right, okay, this is not going to end well. So I managed to get through vaguely things, made it to lectures somehow, but I treated it very much the same as being when I was back at college, where you sort of go and then come back and just pretend, distract yourself, pretend it's not happening and sort of put your blinkers on. And then one day I decided to go to my doctor's because I'd obviously registered for a new GP and I needed a medicine review. And the reason for that was obviously new doctors and stuff. But so what they did was they looked at my prescription and they were like, right, okay, you need to come off the beta blockers straight away. And I was like, what? And they were like, yeah, because I was on, I was taking an inhaler for the time as well, because I used to get seasonal asthma, which is remarkably lame. But it was only when I was running and stuff I'd feel really faint. And funnily enough, that has gone since I came off my medication as well, for you pharmacists out there. And I don't know the specifics, but they said that apparently the combination of the two in rare cases can lead to cardiac arrest. And I remember it played havoc with my blood pressure. I got out of bed one morning, about October time, end of October. So about a month in, I essentially got out of bed too fast or something. I woke up on the floor of my bedroom with a black eye, loads of burst blood vessels all over my right cheek, a crack in my guitar, an acoustic guitar, where essentially I'd fallen. I had a desk in my room. I must have fallen, hit my head somehow on the desk, and then come down and hit my guitar with such force that it has a crack, literally a crack in it. Which is just obscene, really, isn't it? And so I had like a few weeks of concussion, and I had a few other incidents where I fainted, like I was in Booker's, sort of pushing a trolley around, fainted, just in public. And they pushed me around in a trolley with a Mars bar and a cup of tea, which is quite funny. Because what I hadn't been doing was reducing my caffeine intake, because what I hadn't realised is that caffeine actually reverses the effects of beta blockers. So my blood pressure was very high, which was why I kept fainting. And around that time, I started to campaign for mental health, because seeing myself steadily, bit by bit, get better, I kind of wanted to give something back a little bit. I mean, by this point, I hadn't had any support from the university, not from their fault, but because of me, because I didn't know where there was any and I didn't know how to ask for it. And I was still convinced that there was nothing wrong with me in my sort of distracted state of mind. So I'd start to campaign, set up a small campaign group, and we somehow managed to make links with hundreds, thousands of people across the country and some other countries as well, with groups such as the National Centre for Mental Health, Time to Change, obviously our student support services, all sorts of crazily big groups who suddenly respected us. I mean, there was about 10 of us. And we started a mental health support group, which was weekly. Didn't do much, but it was essentially me giving advice, usually flyers and stuff that would, on, for example, relaxation, tiredness, exercise, So things that are really not fundamentally dangerous advice to give, but it was things that I'd learned. It was NHS stuff, it was student support stuff, so it was all certified stuff before you say anything. And so that went on for a while. And then I eventually called that a day at the end of the year, because I'd started counselling and stuff, and I was like, right, okay, let's just keep going. And then, yeah, before I knew it, it was the end of the year. Fun fact, I have not been on a single night out since I've been at university. A single night out. And by that, I mean, I've been to house parties, I've been to my friends, I've spent lots of money at all sorts of restaurants in town, obviously bringing my bike in case I needed a quick escape. No nights out, which still makes people laugh. I stopped drinking as well because the alcohol began to, I realised, really did not go well with medication, and that was something that I still stick to now because I feel like I've got very sensitive brain chemistry and I don't want to play with that, because I found with the alcohol it would make me feel very drunk very quickly and quite weird. Before I knew it was the end of the year, I was like, okay, I can't go home because if I go home, I'll go back to my old ways and I failed and that's the end and I won't be able to come back to uni and I'll end up dropping out and doing something stupid. That's literally how my thinking went, yeah. I stayed here for a whole year. I did a placement here over the summer, got a job in town, and in about June time I came off antidepressants. So we're talking about, God, 9 months ago now. This year's going, isn't it? So 9 months ago, and I went through withdrawal from the antidepressants. I mean, there were two real side effects to that. One was majorly positive, was that the actual depersonalization, which is a common symptom of anxiety and depression, as well as other things. It's very, as far as I can tell, it's very poorly understood. But more or less, the way I've had it described to me is if you imagine your emotions as being like a fuse, your emotions are the current, and then you've got your fuse. I'm so sorry for any physics students or engineers or anything. If you have too much going through, the fuse will blow. That's sort of what depersonalization's like, and it cuts you off and makes everything feel, for want of a better word, grey. And with that, that was very scary, and it's still something I'm still getting used to because it comes and goes in waves. And then the other effect was quite a strange one. I'd get mood swings massively where I'd be very emotional one day and then I'd have like 2 or 3 weeks where I'd just feel numb, particularly if I was stressed. And it's a very strange mix. And I'd also find like weirdly colours would go very weird. So I'd step out of the house one day and I'd feel very sensitive to light, or like things just aren't quite right somehow. It's a very funny one to try and explain. It was a very strange time. And then we're nearly at the end of my story. I know, it's flown by, hasn't it? So I stayed until September. I was 21 in September. And it's very scary feeling that you've lost a few years of your life when you've, when you hit 21, then you're like, oh God, it's all downhill from here, which whenever I say that to people, they laugh. 21 in September, I went home for the first time at Christmas. I saw my dog, who was unbelievable for me during my 6 months at home, and really all of that period, I think he acted almost as a disability dog. He's an all-white border collie called Willie, and he's ridiculously fluffy, very camp, and just generally amazing. And burst into tears and sort of walked around the whole of the town. The town's called Sherborne. Walked around, seeing all my old places. I visited my old school, my old schools, walked around and it just felt completely different. And it felt like, it was very strange. It felt like bereaving, as if a version of me had died and this is me now. And I mean, literally, I got a new Facebook, which is quite, feels like quite a shallow thing to say, but to try and help me deal with this sense of, it's almost like split personalities, because there was that survivalist, like, oh my God, I've got to get through each day. It's, every day is a battle. I can't cope. That sort of thing. To the point where your identity is almost worn out to like a nub. And then you've got the version of me now who is, who enjoys things, still has spells. Like, you know, for example, the past few weeks I had a hard time with dealing with the stress for elections, dealing with another round of concussion because the hypertension is still there. I managed to get out of bed and knock myself out against my wall. Very funny. Funny is probably the wrong word. Yeah, and sort of, and then it's been, it's reached its pinnacle almost with, well, in November we introduced, our university decided to introduce the role of mental health officer. And yeah, I'm the first ever mental health officer in Cardiff Uni history, which is both overwhelming and slightly cool. and it feels like that's another milestone, because, you know, I've come through the medication, I've come through a bout of counselling last year, and it just, it feels very much like everything's bit by bit falling into place. And so, I mean, when I was announced as winning the role at the ceremony, which was honestly last Saturday, so we're talking very, very recent, I burst into tears on stage. And the reason I burst into tears on stage was because I felt accepted for who I was. And even though I was openly honest about being nervous and my mental health problems, I was given the opportunity to have the role, and I was even given a special certificate for being kind and looking after the other candidates. It was, yeah. Which, that was quite funny though, because after I got off stage, after picking up the certificate, I banged my head on the ceiling, which kind of ruined the mood a bit. But it's, yeah, and bit by bit, I feel like I'm putting back together the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle that is George Watkins, and it's scary, but it's quite exciting at the same time, because it gives me the opportunity to wipe the slate clean and start fresh in many ways. And I guess looking forward, what I want to do now is find a way to give back, both to the university and to find a way where I'm going to be able to help other students who are in similar places with similar conditions or wildly different conditions that I've never experienced. I guess, yeah, absolutely. And it's why I'm really relishing the opportunity. I think, you know, I mean, the statistics for mental health, but for young people are just absolutely terrifying. I think these are all through young minds. I think they're young minds. I apologise if I've got them wrong. I think it's the obvious one, which is always bandied around, is we've got, I think, 1 in 4 people have a mental health problem, which can range from, oh God, panic attacks, eating disorders, bipolar, psychosis, schizophrenia, all sorts of different conditions that are on a massive spectrum. And I mean, I almost don't like the banner mental health sometimes, because I feel like they're all lumped into one thing.
That was George's story. As you have heard, he suffered with, battled, and then overcome some very serious mental health problems over the last 7 years. And I'm sure you'll agree with me, from his experiences, he's gone on to do some very inspiring things. I asked George what he would tell anyone that's suffering or feels that they can relate to some of the things he felt in the past. And here's what he had to say.
On a general level, I would advise you to do a combination of things. of getting in touch with your doctor, which is great. Side note, it frustratingly varies the level of support that you'll get from your GP, depending on who they are and how clued up they are, because some can be better than others. I would say, where possible, try and have a chat with your friends, maybe your parents as well. The more open you are with how you're feeling, the more normal it'll feel, and the less you'll feel like it's something that only you've experienced and that no one ever has experienced before.
If you have been listening to this podcast and feel that you need help with your mental health and well-being, you can call the Mind Info Line on 0300 123 3393 or text 86463, or call Samaritans on 116 123. For listeners in the US, go to mentalhealth.gov or call 1-877-726-4727. Problems with mental health are not to go unnoticed, and we need to keep pushing for our government and our health services to carry on and improve their support so people can get the help they need. Think Tank is a free and independent podcast in association with Cardiff Student Media. This podcast is only made possible by you, our loyal listeners on Patreon. To support Think Tank, go to patreon.com/thinktankpodcast. And as always, thank you for listening. The music in this episode was by Francis Lindgren.